back to another episode of the Tetracast. This is RPG Site's weekly podcast where we get the site staff together to talk about our favorite genre of video games. I'm your host. My name is Brian Vitale. Joining me, I have Josh Torres.
Hi. It's been one hell of a week already.
And Chow Min Wu.
How's it going?
So we are recording this episode on Saturday, June 8th. Adam and James are over in LA right now at Summer Games Fest and all the related kind of on-site activities there. We are kind of recording this halfway through the slate of things that are happening, but we figured we would still record, even though it's going to be just the three of us, me, Josh, and Chow here to record, so that we're not queuing up even more for next week, because the main event, the Keeley showcase, was just last night. We have things that are slated for today, like the Wholesome Direct Future Game Show. The Xbox and PC Gaming Showcase are both either later today or tomorrow. Of course, at the time that this podcast is published, those events will have occurred. But we're going to talk about what has already been announced prior to those to help kind of even our plate to the best extent that we can. We also have a Nintendo Direct that has been announced for June. Nintendo themselves have said that they're going to have one, so that could come up at any time. And we have also just some more game-specific news that certain publishers and developers have mentioned will be coming out later in June. But we'll talk about the things that have been announced, a lot of demos that are available, the Summer of Indies, some people have called this. We have some bigger games that we've had some updates for. So this is going to be a very news-focused direct, or not direct, this is our direct, it's the RPG Site Direct, a news podcast.
RPG Site.
And then we'll have the games that we'll talk about, usually if we get a chance to talk about them, will be in the context of the demos that we've played for upcoming games. So that's the sort of things that this podcast is going to go over. So I've tried to organize our little timeline to the best extent that I could, try to group, you know, bigger games in front, indie games in back, try to group them a little bit by type, but it's going to kind of be just in the order that we have them listed here, and we'll try to have our timestamps as clear as possible. So if you see a game you're interested in, hopefully you can go right back to where we're going to be talking about all these different games from up and down the size spectrum, you know, Western developers, Eastern developers, all those sorts of things.
Majority of these demos, like, aren't going to be out till, like, at the time of this recording next week, but, like, when you're probably listening to this, probably out now on Steam, because it's all part of Steam Next Fest, and some of these smaller demos came out ahead of Steam Next Fest. So that's kind of the main event for the demos that they're all kind of circling around. Like, the two demos that I briefly got my hands on, one was an RPG that we've been doing news for in the site, was Keylocker. Sort of a cyberpunk RPG, has a really nice aesthetic and style to it. But unfortunately, like, I played a bit of that demo, probably like about 30 minutes to an hour-ish, but I just bounced off of it, unfortunately, because while I really, really dig the visual and the sound of that game, the gameplay itself is, it's one of those unfortunate instances where I believe an indie developer just kind of mishandles the timed hits mechanic of turn-based RPGs, like, you know, how it was done Super Mario RPG, and Thousand Year Door, and all sorts of stuff, where the battle system has you moving along these grids, these tiles, towards enemies to get them in the range of your attack. But every single action that you do, whether it's a normal attack or whether it's an enemy attacking you, everything is like a life or death timed hit almost. Like, even in the tutorial, if, like, you miss one or two, like, perfect dodges, the timed perfect dodges, they just take off, like, 50 to 70% of your life, you know? And then there's values on the difficulty levels that I play normal and all that stuff, but it's just one of those games that's, like, it really demands. If you're really into, you know, timed hits on everything, this might be for you, but personally, I'm not a fan of, like, getting punished for missing a timed hit, whether I'm on the offense or the defense. So, like, if you miss a timed hit on your offense, you don't really do that much damage. And then, depending on how, if you miss an incoming attack either early or later, you'll get different damage values. And then, like, even sometimes you do the perfect dodge. Well, actually, perfect dodge, you won't do any damage, but it's a pretty tight window. And then when you do, like, a perfect hit to power up your attack, you'll still take a little bit of damage that you have to mitigate through other tools in that game. So like at the beginning of battle, you'll have like no energy or mana, and then you have to go use another command that'll do another, not timed hit, but it's like a little rhythm mini game, almost like a Guitar Hero S style mini game. And then depending on how you do well on that, you'll charge like, you know, a certain amount of energy, and then you can use that for offense or defensive capabilities. And it's just, it's kind of tiring to play even in that short amount of time because it demands so many timed hits. So it's one of those things that, like, it's a little unfortunate. I wonder if they'll reconsider, because I know it kind of advertises itself as an unforgiving sort of game, but I'm like, there could be other ways.
I went too hard.
Probably. Yeah, there's probably other ways to like still get that point across without making it feel tiring to play.
Yeah, right? And this is a game that we've checked in on a few times. I think it was announced back in 2020. Again, this is Keylocker. So very much kind of they explicitly call both Chrono Trigger and Mario and Luigi like as inspirations. I'm not exactly sure I see the Chrono Trigger, but of course the timed hits, it's a very Mario RPG staple. But yeah, unlike either of those two inspirations, got the rhythm based combat basically permeating throughout everything that you do. Cyberpunk aesthetic, isometric perspective. But right. Yeah, I could see that if it's, you know, unlike the Mario RPGs, where the timed hits are kind of bonuses, this is like core to the crux of the, you know, you can't turn it off. If they establish it as unforgiving, and then that just doesn't allow you any chance to like have any wiggle room at all, I could see how that could be frustrating over an extended period of time.
Mm-hmm. And another cool one's not necessarily an RPG that I tried out, just the last one I did, because most of these I'm going to try out next week for that Steam Next Fest. It's not necessarily in our wheelhouse, it's more of a strategy game, but I think it's really cool, and I think RPG fans would like it. It's called Tactical Breach Wizards. I know people have been talking about the development of this game for quite a while now. I don't know exactly when it started showing up on the scene, but it's a really, really cool strategy game where it's basically like, imagine if like you're doing like a more military secret agent-esque type of strategy game, like in that sort of surface, but then it's like the real world meshed with like a fantasy world, where like imagine if like wizards existed in modern society, and like how that would play out. So like before each mission, you deploy like your I only got to play with like up to two party members at a time in that demo, but like you can choose like their placement on like where to breach from, because some stages have like multiple breach points, and then you breach into the room and you kind of sort of puzzle out of like how to efficiently take down as many people as possible. And then there's like sometimes environmental things that you can push them in, like you can push them out of windows, so you don't have to worry about depleting their life with just your offensive tools alone. You can like push them towards the window and they'll fall out of it and instant kill them. You can do stuff like push them into other objects, which will do another point of damage if they hit like a wall or something when you push them back. It's a little bit like Into the Breach in that aspect. There's also like you can have like magical spells like a chain lightning bolt that you can chain to like up to like two other enemies to take them out or do a significant amount of damage. But that costs mana, and then you actually like have this mana resource where like you can spend mana to do like powerful skills like that. But then in order to regain mana, you have to like hack into laptops across the like the level to like gain like one charge of mana. Again, it has a really nice like sense of humor to it, and the nice part about it is it's like one of the main characters is sort of like a wizard that like can command time. They can actually how the game treats your tactical strategy approach as like I'm doing these moves, and I can see like how I think you can foresee like how the enemy will respond to them, and then when you finally like choose like end turn or like execute action, it'll do those all in real time. But if there's something that's like that was like wrong with your approach or like you don't like, you can actually just like rewind to like the start of that turn and like kind of redo your actions, and maybe there's like a better, more efficient way to go about clearing out the level. It's a really, really neat strategy game that I think people who like strategy RPGs should check out. It's a pretty nice twist to the formula.
Yeah,
Tactical Breach Wizards.
Yeah, and it's kind of always strategy and RPG really go hand in hand a lot. So drawing the line as pure strategy versus strategy RPG, It's one of those things that there's a lot of intuition to it, but everyone kind of has, there's no clear definition, like, you know, Into the Breach or Metal Slug Tactics, even, which is an upcoming game. Like, how much do those lean into RPG versus strategy or tactical?
Right.
And, like, I guess I don't know offhand, you know, off the cuff, what's the difference between strategy and tactical game. I'm not 100% sure. Everyone kind of has their own opinion. But it's kind of cool to see how this one may not have explicitly any RPG strong elements there, but it might have some of the same kind of concepts that an RPG fan might enjoy in a pure strategy game.
Yeah.
And then since you did talk about Keylocker, they did have another presence. They've kind of, the studio over at Moonana and then publisher Serenity Forge, usually they take the time during the summer, you know, streams and events to update us on the status of their game. It's still slated for a summer release this year. So it's been in development a while. So hopefully those that have been looking forward to it won't have to be waiting much longer. They did announce that in addition to the previously announced PC, PlayStation, and Xbox, it is also now planned to launch for Nintendo Switch as well. So all but confirmed, it'll be a simultaneous launch for all the platforms sometime this summer, so within the next couple months. So we'll keep our eyes out for that, because it might come up this week, we're not sure, or it might come up when it's ready to release. We'll keep an eye out. Okay, I'm just going to start going into the news topics here. Oh, I guess before we go into news, maybe I'll go into our... we have a handful of different features on the site. I'll just kind of quickly go through these. So these are reviews, op-eds, and a few other previews that we've put up over the last week. As we kind of have teed up, it has been a very busy week, not only for upcoming games, but a lot of games that have been releasing or about to release. So I'll just kind of go through these. A couple games came out in May that we weren't able to get to on release, that James was able to cover up on the site, one as a review and one under our Branching Path label, which is kind of like a label for op-eds, opinion pieces, or review-like pieces for games that aren't explicitly RPGs, games that we don't typically cover. He put up a review for a game called Cryptmaster. This is a monochromatic first-person dungeon crawler with a very spooky horror vibe that came out on Steam in May. It is a game that on Steam has been well-regarded with really good word of mouth. It is overwhelmingly positive. However, James was a little less down on it. He did not feel as strongly about it, but instead of speaking for him, I'll just kind of point to his review up on the site. He does think it's a solid proof of concept and does think it's a good starting point. This is from Akupara Games, but we do have the review for Cryptmaster up on the site at rpgsite.net. The other game that James was able to cover this month before he left for LA, well, I guess he lives in LA, before he left specifically for Summer Games Fest, he did cover the Metroidvania 9 Souls. This is kind of a Hollow Knight, Ori-style Metroidvania sort of Souls-like thing, but not explicitly an RPG, so not a game that we've covered, though we probably could have. But unlike Cryptmaster, he did think very highly of this. He did kind of put up an opinion feature up on the site. Not a scored review, but it reads very similar to one, but a game that he has been pretty glowing about, even on previous episodes of the Tetracast. So he put up his thoughts in written form up on the site at rpgsite.net.
He said if he was able to score it, he would give it a 9, but his Twitter seems to be suspended for some odd reason right now. I don't know why.
He's still on Twitter. We'll put his current Twitter. I'll check with him before we publish this to see if we'll put his current Twitter on the podcast post as we normally do. But yeah, that's evolving circumstance there with his Twitter access. So we'll see. Of course, one of the bigger releases later this month is the big expansion for Elden Ring, Shadow of the Erdtree. Alex was able to pop in and put up a preview for Shadow of the Erdtree. He kind of framed it as a listicle. It's a preview, so people have different opinions on how useful previews are. There are some key things here that if you haven't been following the news explicitly, you might, like, some of these things were things that I was not aware of, but Shadow of the Erdtree is From Software's biggest DLC to date. It is a separate map called the Land of Shadow, so which is kind of similar to how a lot of From Software DLC has worked in the past, but you can travel between the base area and the new area at will once you activate not a bonfire but a Site of Grace. Alex does go into his little preview listicle about this new thing called a Skadutree Blessing, which is basically some consumable way to boost your attack power and reduce your incoming damage. So it's kind of thought of as the summons. Like, it's a way to make the game easier. If you can access the DLC at any point, even though it's kind of framed as like an end game area. But, you know, Elden Ring is not designed in a linear fashion. But he talks a little bit about some of the consumables there to help take the edge off if you go there, you know, earlier versus later, things like that. But we have a preview up on the site for those that are eagerly looking forward to that DLC. Here's one that is a Chow special. So late last year, on December, we got the official English localization of the Type Moon visual novel, Witch on the Holy Night. I remember spending a couple of podcasts kind of talking about it and kind of what the implications are, what it meant, kind of the event it was.
I think it's like, was that just for the, because it came out previously on the Switch, and I think that was the pre-C release, right?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it came out on Switch, you know, I think the year before that.
Oh,
okay. I think how it went was James said that he was going to do it, and I rolled the view up and put it there. And it's like, oh, this was a bit of miscommunication over there. But, you know, it was done a long time ago. It was never posted because I wasn't really confident about writing a visual novel review. So it's like my first one. So it's just like...
Yeah, it's a tricky one. It's always kind of a weird affair. But, you know, I think it did a good job.
It's like, yeah, it's just kinetic novel, you know? What can you say?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the site has kind of been up and down based on who our current staff and contributors are at the time about how much we cover visual novels. Like, you might say, like, why do you cover visual novels? Like, I don't know, because we can. Like, who's going to stop us? but yeah, so that was a game that you felt pretty strongly of and wanted to write a review. So we're not going to say no. And we put up on the site. So yeah, in the past, we've covered them more or less, depending on which year you're talking about. But you wrote up your thoughts on Witch on the Holy Night and put them up on the site. So go ahead and give Chow's Witch on the Holy Night review. Up on the site, a read.
Yeah, and then the Tsukihime official localization will be out on later this month, like the 27th, I believe, or PS4 Switch.
So. Yeah, can you believe it? We finally have them in English.
I'm really interested to check it. Like, I definitely want. I'm definitely gonna get it. I hopefully have time to like read it because it is a long visual novel. It's a very long visual novel.
It's like, what is it? It's just like less than 3 weeks.
But also depends on like what's there's gonna be a lot of games out.
A couple more features up on the site from James. The first two are both paired together for the upcoming expansion Final Fantasy 14 Dawn Trail. He had the opportunity to play, I think, like a 6-7-8 hour session with the game. So he put up his preview thoughts again, on that expansion, specifically focusing around the two new classes. He also put up he tagged it as an interview. I'm not sure if this was a submitted question answer or if he had a sit down with Yoshi P. And he framed this interview with Yoshi P about the idea of sanctioning Final Fantasy XIV raid races. So this is not something that I can speak to directly. It's been largely a community run effort up to this point, is my understanding. But Yoshi P has stated some desire to kind of sanction it in a way. So the ideas about what that would need, what Yoshi P's ideas are for potentially implementing that, things like that. So we kind of have both the preview feature and this interpretation of the interview up on the site as well, both published by James. And then I don't know when he did this, but James apparently also put up some time in with Destiny 2's most recent expansion, The Final Shape. So Destiny 2 is a strange game that we kind of check in on like every time there's a major release, and usually James is on the forefront of that. So he did put up let's see, what did he tag it as, a preview or a review? I'm trying to see.
There's like more like a feature, I guess, like
yeah. So I'm not sure exactly what he tagged it as, but he did took a look in at Destiny 2 The Final Shape. You know, it's my understanding, having not been in the Destiny 2 sphere, is that this is kind of similar to a lot of the other MMOs or MMOs like games, service games, where this is kind of like the conclusion of a very long story arc. So I know a lot of Destiny 2 players have been really excited about this for a while. Apparently it took a team like 19 hours to beat the added raid or something like that. The details, take that with a grain of salt. I'm not on the Destiny 2, like not on the up and up, but from my seat on the fringe, it seems like it's been received pretty well, except that I have someone at my real life job who has been playing this that has told me that the servers have been on fire ever since release. So hopefully
they've been up and down. I have a friend who's doing the raid, and or whatever the new raid that came out. It's apparently freaking crazy. I don't know if anyone's cleared it yet. I haven't checked it on that.
Maybe the 19 hour was a different piece of content, but
it's a lot of manipulating shapes from what I hear. A lot of shape recognition, which is I hear it's a large obstacle to clear for the Destiny community right now.
And that was kind of quick rapid fire, but we have a lot of the features up on the site, rpgsite.net. And we also post news on rpgsite.net, and Josh has been carrying the brunt. Josh has been our Atlas for like the last 2 weeks.
Since Adam's there, I'm like, well, it is what it is. So, but you know, Adam's been helping me, thankfully, here and there, which I very much appreciate. I figured most of it, I'll probably have to grind through it.
But yeah, so like I kind of stated at the top of the podcast, this is not in any real particular order. I tried to make it make sense, but we'll just go through this. The first one is more of a tease because this news, the further news, is going to be coming later on June 11th. Again, we're recording this on the 8th. And this is for the upcoming Dragon Age game. Dragon Age Dreadwolf is now known as Dragon Age The Veilguard, with more information to be shared on June 11th. So, what do we think about the name change?
I don't know, but it's also kind of blander. I feel that there's an edge to Dreadwolf, right? Because of just the way that it sounds. The Veilguard sounds like it's very bland, I think. It's like, okay, they put up a blog post that, a little bit more of why they need to change the name. So they revealed that there'll be 7 companions aside from your main character in this newest release, and that the reason for the name change was they wanted to focus more on your heroes rather than like the villain, which is like, okay, I mean, sure, I guess. I mean, it ultimately doesn't matter, but people care about first and foremost and whatever they're gonna show. Yeah, apparently it's gonna be a 15-minute gameplay reveal. I think everyone just crossing their fingers that it looks good.
Yeah. It is. To me, like, and again, this is just a name, so I don't want to spend too much time just like criticizing the name when we're going to get actual more meaningful stuff in a week. But to me, if it was just Dragon Age Veilguard, like, I think The Veilguard makes it sound like a Netflix spinoff or something like that, or like a comic adaptation. Like, it just sounds like an accompanying piece. And there was that one Dragon Age show, like, released on Netflix like a year or two ago that I don't think made any waves at all. So I'm curious about how that turned out.
What was the name of that? I'd already forgot the name of it.
I don't even remember, but it came out. And I remember, like, circling it sort of on my calendar, like, sure, I'll watch that. And then I never watched it.
Absolution. That was the name of it. So. A lot of very middling, like, first glance reviews from what, you know, that came out in 2022, and just didn't really make a splash. I mean, it's definitely like no Arcane or Edgerunners in that regard.
Which made a really big positive splash, both those anime adaptations.
Yeah, and then Arcane, they're already teasing like the next part of Arcane as well.
Some more details will come next week. Maybe we'll just kind of leave it at that. We have the title.
It just feels weird that they're like, it's hard to say it's so late in development because we don't know when this thing's going to come out until maybe they announce it.
A lot of the scuttlebutt has been that it's this year, but from various levels of verified leaker, we have no idea. And that's not us being coy. We have no idea. Maybe it'll give us release date in a week. So we'll
hopefully, just whatever they show, it's good, because like a lot of people, like this game has like kind of the whole world against it of like people have so many different expectations for what this game is in their heads, and it's had such a tumultuous like journey in game development, like that's been heavily publicized, that it's like, I guess we'll see what that all means in a few days.
Okay, we have a few other game announcements here that I've listed. We have 3 in a row before we go into some trailers for some existing games. So the first one is a neo-noir turn-based RPG called Neon Blood. This is not a game we've covered before on the site, though it was, I believe, announced a while ago. So this is not like the reveal of the game, but it's the first time we've covered it on our site. So this is a game slated for releasing later this year on all platforms. And you were the one that was able to cover the news and decided to create its entity on the site and everything. It's like a side-scrolling cyberpunk kind of aesthetic.
Yeah. It's like that, like pixels for their the like high fidelity pixels for the character designs, and but the actual environment that you're traversing is like 3D assets. It has a really nice like neon, of course, cyberpunk sort of aesthetic to it. A lot of like neon signs that like provide lighting as you're traveling around, and then they haven't really got into like so much of the battle system yet, but we do know it's like a turn-based battle system based on like a little bit of footage and the screenshots of like, hey, you'll have options to attack, defend, use skills and an ultimate and so forth, but they haven't gone too much into how the character building will work. And like the story premise is very much you're playing this detective. The humanity is on the brink after World War III has happened, and now they're all the remnants of humanity are now contained within this metropolis called Viridis, and then it's split between two remaining cities, which is like kind of the high class and the low class city of like Bright City and Blind City. So you play this detective from Blind City named Axel McCoyne, and they haven't really gone too much into like the premise, but we just know that like you're gonna take on like the role of this detective and like kind of go against like this the injustices based on like the hierarchical structure, like, you know, the split between the social classes and between these two cities and so forth. So I just thought it had a really cool look. They did describe it as an RPG, and you can kind of see it in the battle system, and then we have yet to see how they're actually gonna like build your characters and like what like if there'll be I think the trailer shows off like other party members as well in it, so I was like, sure, why not. The main new news here was like they gave a time frame of Q4 2024, and that it'll have a physical release in a very limited form, in the sense that like only the PlayStation 5 and Switch versions are getting this limited edition physical release with like some goodies like a art book, digital soundtrack, and city guide, but it's only for select European retailers. So
you probably had to deal with like limited run or some stuff like that. Is that what's happening?
No, they're partnering with their publisher Meridium for this, so it's not limited run, but it's just it's just right now the if you want a physical copy of this game, it's only going to be at Europe pretty much. So if you want to import it, you have to deal with shipping costs and so forth. If you're like in the States.
Dang. This game looks really cool from the screenshots that's there. It kind of reminds me of this like cyberpunk like 2770 artwork that they turned like pixelated. I always thought that whole thing was like kind of like a spoof concept for April Fools, but it looks like somebody took that concept and just made a whole game out of it.
Technically. Yeah, it's a really visually striking game, and I hope like, you know, the gameplay holds up. It does look really, really cool.
The next game announcement that we have is for an action RPG, and this is for a game called Tribe Nine. It is being developed by Akatsuki Games under the supervision of Tokyo Games. It's the same studio that made Master Detective Archives Rain Code. It has the artist Rui Komatsuzaki, who did Danganronpa. So it has that sort of character design to it. So Akatsuki Games basically revealed the first gameplay trailer for it, introducing a lot of the characters, showing a fair bit of gameplay, and of course just like the general art style and UI. And you know, we always mention like, please show how the game actually plays, and this first trailer actually shows a fair bit of menu UI, gameplay UI, like how the game might actually look and play, so I do appreciate it for that. No details in terms of release, but they have said that they are planning to have a closed beta test on Steam in August, and the game will also be available for mobile devices for its full release.
Yeah, that's a free-to-play title as well.
Got
on that, so you know, I imagine there'll be they already mentioned have in-game purchases, so there will be some sort of like monetization on it. We don't know exactly. There's like a gacha, probably have a gacha system. But in terms of like gameplay itself, it's like the traversal itself is like, you have like pixelated characters once again traveling through 3D environments, but then when you get into battles, you'll have your party of three engage in like real-time battles against enemies. You can like freely move around and attack, and then there'll be like some sequences like bosses that have like bullet hell patterns, so like people who played Nier before will definitely see like a little bit of the lineage. This is a weird one because There was a Tribe Nine anime that aired in January 2022, and I did watch that. I was like, it was okay. But the weird thing about that is, like, that Tribe Nine anime was very heavily focused. It's like gang territory warfare, and like that was the premise. But the way that that everyone like combated each other, like confronted each other, was like through like an extreme form of like futuristic baseball. It was very brutal baseball, so to speak. And like you see a little bit of the baseball here through like a character skill, but in terms of like everything else, like the baseball aspect has been like
I had wrote a note to myself that it was an anime, but then I just forgot to say it. But when I watched the gameplay trailer of the game, I didn't really pick up on baseball. So I go to the IMDb page for Tribe Nine, the anime, and in the very first summary sentence, it says, "In a futuristic era overrun by gangs, a tournament of superpowered baseball takes place to determine which gang shall rule." Like,
yeah.
Okay. I didn't pick that up in the game.
Yeah, exactly. So I was like, when I saw it, I was like, oh, so I wonder how they're gonna like translate like the baseball aspect of it, because that's how I know Tribe Nine as, because I watched the show and I was like, what the fuck is this? And interesting, I guess. I mean, you do see a character use like a baseball special or skill in it. Hopefully it's cool. Hopefully it's fun. I don't know. I haven't signed up for the beta. I don't know if I'm that interested in trying it out in a beta format. But I could be convinced if like someone, if the full release comes out and people are like, hey, this is actually really good, then maybe I'll be convinced. Right now, I'm just kind of, I could be swayed either way. I'm pretty neutral on it.
So yeah, those are the two announcements that I had up front here. So Neon Blood and Tribe Nine. This next one I won't spend too much time on. I spent last week talking about my kind of final thoughts on the latest Guild Wars 2 expansion, Secrets of the Obscure. They were going to announce their newest one on June 4th. So they've announced their fifth expansion called Janthir Wilds. So they're following up on the yearly expansion. So this is the expansion that will launch on August 20th and then get three like quarterly every 3 month updates into next year. So for those that aren't playing the game, the biggest things that they've added here that people have been asking for who play the game for a long, long time is player housing, which, you know, it sounds like one of those things like a lot of people either care a lot or not at all about player housing. There's really no in between. But it's one of those things that it's kind of been something that the game has never really had, and they're finally actually going to implement it, which you might say like, well, I'd rather they implement something a little bit more meaningful, but they are bringing back raids, which haven't been in the game for 5 years. And one thing that I saw that they didn't advertise this, but I saw a Twitter post, they brought in a developer from Sims 4 to work on the player housing. I'm like, oh, that's, you know,
oh, okay.
Nice.
That seems like a good fit. So I think from what I can tell, I'm pretty excited. They're pulling on some story threads from like the original game from Guild Wars 1 back in like 2005. So some things that I've kind of never really sat, which I'm both hot and cold on. I kind of wish they did something just completely new. Like this is something that we've invented this year. Like now we're not preying on nostalgia, but they decided to go an opposite route. They're like, we're going to focus on this thing that we haven't gone back in on for like 15 years. So I'm like, that's also exciting because it's like a lingering plot thread that has never been picked up that they're deciding to pick back up. So obviously I'll report back in maybe when it releases late in August. They're also bringing a new weapon type, spears. Some of the characters will like use them like melee weapons. Some characters will, you know, like more like hoplites or whatever you call them, like the Roman soldiers that chuck them like javelins or like joust.
Okay,
with them.
Right. So it's always funny, even when a game like a game that's run as long as Guild Wars 2 is like, we're finally bringing spears into the game. It's like,
well, yes, spears used to just be an underwater weapon, and now they're allowing them on land. And
okay,
how the classes work in Guild Wars is that it used to be that there are 9 classes, and each class can use a different array of weapons, but not everyone can use every weapon. But for spears, they're saying everyone will get spears regardless of what class you play. They'll just use them in different ways. I won't go into the details, but the one that I will just entertain is the elementalist. As they've added weapons to that class over the years, a lot of the elementalist weapons that they've added have all been melee. So just the archetype of being that ranged spellcaster has not really been well like supported. because most of the weapons are like being up close and personal as an elementalist. So people are like, just please ranged spear for elementalists, please. Like, don't make me go close. And elementalists are low health, low armor classes. So yeah, very squishy. They're kind of considered like a high skill ceiling class. Like, please. And they haven't stated yet at the time of recording. They I think they've given details on 3 of the 9 classes, and they're gonna do the marketing ramp up as you expect. But yeah, seems pretty exciting. I think despite how sour the last expansion ended, in terms of being a really kind of weird ending story-wise, I think a lot of people, the showing for Xanthar Wilds has been strong enough that I think people are willing to like, okay, maybe it's just growing pains with the new model. We'll give them another go. That seems to be the optimism, I guess, seems to be the underlying current for the announcement. So.
Do they have any announcement for the housing, like how it works? Like, I know in Final Fantasy 14, it becomes like this PvP where, because it's, you know, it's all server based instead, like everyone has like their own instance house in some different MMOs.
They have not detailed it yet. What they basically did like a blog post for touching on what the expansion will bring, and now they're kind of going every week into a more detailed. Like, here's how spirits will work, here's how housing will work, here's how these other things we announced will work. So they haven't gone into detail yet, other than saying that it's account-wide. So it doesn't matter if you've got one character or 20, you get one housing instance, which makes sense, because I think the character cap is like 60, and they don't want to be like, you have 60 houses burdened on the server for a single player, the same that has a guy that has one character or whatever. That's the only thing they've said. So no details yet, but the fact that they're bringing in like external people who have history developing this sort of thing for it makes me seem like they're really taking it seriously. They're not just trying to tick a box and say, yeah, our MMO is housing or whatever. People are optimistic about it. Of course, there's some people that say like, well, I don't care about housing. Like, I care about raids, but yeah, they're bringing in that too. So we'll see how well that goes.
Before we go to the next news story on the dock, since we're on the MMO talk, I do want to, I don't really like have the most enthusiasm because I'm not a new world player, but I think the news story itself is interesting. Amazon Games announced a new world, Aeternum, that is like half an expansion, half an overhaul of the game. So it's coming out on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series X and S, and PC on October 15th. So this will mean that New World does come to consoles on that date, because Aeternum has all the content that the base New World game has, along with the Rise of the Angry Earth expansion to consoles. And for people who already bought the base New World game on PC and the Rise of the Angry Earth expansion, they'll get Aeternum for free at no extra cost. And what they've announced so far for this Aeternum expansion re-release console port thing is like it'll share the same servers as PC, so it'll be fully cross-play. All of the platforms will share the same servers with each other, so you can play with each other or just see them out on the field. And then Aeternum brings like a new island zone that has like its story that you can play solo or co-op, entirely solo or co-op. It'll introduce large-scale PvP for the first time in New World. I guess people have been wanting that. And then a new like 10-player raid as well. And then so there'll be endgame solo trials, new character archetypes, revamped dialogue system, whatever that means, an upgraded leveling experience, whatever that means, and such. So it's kind of a weird, it's no secret that New World has been like on the downturn. Like, it had a very strong start. Like, you saw a lot of people raving about its player numbers in its first few months, but over time that player base has diminished.
I think it got restored a little bit from the expansion. That's mm-hmm. what I heard. Like, people were like kind of lukewarm about the game, but after the expansion, they're kind of like, oh yeah, it seems like a decent, like, slowly steady climb back.
Yeah, I don't know exactly like what the health of the game is like right now, and like how the player base and the developers like see that. Obviously, I'm not tuned into the New World community in that aspect, but I just think it's really interesting that like there's sort of like half like a re-release, like reboot, like revitalization effort for New World, and you know, hopefully it's cool. So I just wanted to call that to attention that like this Aeternum thing is just like not like your typical expansion release. It's also like has consoles in mind too, to bring them into the fold.
October. Now, speaking of which, have they announced Blue Protocol as well? Because that Amazon Games have it, took that over.
So we know they did like preliminarily announce it a few years. I don't know how long it's been. I think it was a few years back to bring that to the West. But since it's like, since it has been acknowledged by Bandai Namco as like has been done, has performed very poorly so far in the Japanese market, I don't know what their plans are for that game. But as far as we know, we have no idea what the status of the Western release is for that game. If they're still bringing it over or not at all. We just don't know. Because that game seems to not be hitting the numbers that Bandai Namco thought it would. And there's been nothing to suggest that they can turn it around yet.
So I went to the Reddit for New World. I played the beta, and like I thought New World is the sort of game that I would definitely play more time if I just, you know, could freeze time. And like, this is just a vertical slice of what I read in the Reddit right now here on Saturday, June, whatever the day is, 8th. Goodbye, New World. What a sad day for me and New World. Announcement fully explained. To anybody wondering if this is still considered an MMO, like, apparently more details indicating that it is still an MMORPG. The announcement in a nutshell. So it just seems like it, like the announcement, and I was even from a fringe, like I saw some discussion in the Discord, like, is this a spin-off? Is this a console version of a different game? Is this just the same IP? And it just seems like even like those that are visiting the Reddit, it wasn't 100% clear, because like they didn't frame this announcement like New World is coming to consoles. They just said New World Aeternum coming out October, and we're like, wait, what is this? So it just seems like the communication has not been great.
Yeah, like I had to like go over it with Adam, like, you know, before, like, you know, because we got like details ahead of time before publishing this. So I was just like redouble checking with Adam. It's like, is this what they're actually saying? You know. Because even us were like, what the fuck is, like, the way they worded this was very poor. Like, I even put the entire press release up on that news post, because you could take it from them. Like, it's as puzzling as it is to us in the way that they phrased this. But from what I understand, it's just like, it is a new world, but like the title is just different for the console, but it's still that the entire new world game plus expansion plus this new content on that, and it's even sharing the same servers and content with one-to-one parity with the PC release and players.
So I'm finding I'm finding an op-ed that was posted literally today, literally like 2 hours ago, on Massively OP. In players, this is written by Tyler Edwards at Massively OP. New World's Aeternum relaunch is actually a solid update with terrible timing and communication. In players' defense, Amazon's messaging around the update has been more than a bit confusing. So let me clarify a few things. It is not a complete redo of the game. It is not a shift away from being an MMORPG, even if Amazon is going out of its way to avoid the term in literally every communication.
So, okay, I
feel a little bit better being like, am I just confused? And I'm like, no, I'm confused, but it seems like everyone's confused. So
I feel like Amazon Games has tried its best to try to get away from like the New World base release to like, because I don't know why, but they tried their best to word it that it's like, oh, it's definitely not this, but it's like, but it is that. But they're like, it's like, come on.
Apparently the fact that this is in October kind of threw, this is me kind of gleaning quickly from snippets. The fact that it's that, you know, apparently the New World community has been waiting for like an update. They knew one was coming, but it's not coming till October. They're like, well, that's longer than I thought, that sort of thing. So it seems like there's a little bit of, we've been waiting for this and now we're confused what the hell it even is, sort of thing going around.
Right.
Explaining some of
that
sentiment. All right. So,
Even the info that the leaked info that we got ahead of time from some colleagues, like they misunderstood it, which makes sense because they thought it was just like a new world spinoff that relied on like knowledge from like the MMO. It's like, that can't be right. That seems really weird.
Well, to me, I think I like the idea as a concept of like hypothetical, because this is not what New World Aeternum is. Here's a single player game that takes place in the WoW universe. That is an independent story, and then if you want to play more, we've got our.
It's like a Valve, where like it's a new experience, but in the Pillars universe.
Yeah, only but or like if because we were just talking about it, if Arena had said, here's a single player Guild Wars game, action RPG, whatever. But, and if you like this, if you like the mythos of this story, we have our MMO that you can play. Like, we thought that might be what Eternum was. Like, it's like a snippet of the same mythos and IP, but nope, it's a rebranding of the base. Let me try to summarize in one sentence based on what we've gone over. It is a rebranding of the MMO coming to consoles that will be cross-play, cross everything with the MMO. It's a rebranding. It's how I am interpreting it. The thing is, I would say, like, we'll follow up, and like, we will to some extent, but I don't think we have anyone on staff actively playing it, so we're limited in what we can do here. But obviously, go give Massively OP that article a read, and we also have the article on RPG site with the details as clear as we can put it, straight from Amazon, even though it seems like they have not been very clear themselves. But New World Eternum coming out October 15th. We'll leave it at that. All right, a lot of these next coming, so a lot of what we're going to be talking about next is trailers. So obviously trailers on a podcast, we'll do what we can to make it as interactable or as detailed as possible. So these first handful of trailers, a lot of these were shown during the stage presentation at Summer Games Fest, or were just announced alongside the Summer Games Fest events. So in no particular order, we'll start out with a new trailer for Monster Hunter Wilds. Of course, we just saw our first trailer for Monster Hunter Wilds less than a month ago at the very end of May at the Sony event. So this is the second look within a few weeks of the upcoming game coming in 2025. This one focuses on the fight between the hunters and a monster that was teased in the last video called a Balahara, which looks like a very spooky, sandwormy thing with legs. It looks really cool. I really like this trailer more than the last one because it's a lot of just actual, like, this is what the game might actually look like, both cinematics and gameplay. But I don't know. I love the design of this thing.
Especially the way that they framed the trailer, because it was like your hunter and a companion like running away from like a pack of like these sandworms chasing after them. It's like, oh god, that's scary.
That's terrifying. But the big news that they announced on stage at the Summer Games Fest from producer Ryozo Sugimoto was that yes, at long last, Monster Hunter Wilds will support crossplay across PlayStation 5, Xbox Series, and Steam, but it launches in 2025 worldwide simultaneously.
From a Monster Hunter noob here, I don't know much about
it. Yeah, that's new to Monster Hunter.
We talked a little bit about this a couple of weeks ago, where World never hit that. Sunbreak and Rise were probably even worse because they started as an exclusive to the Switch. And finally, Wilds doesn't have a Switch release. Don't know about Switch 2, but it's going to launch crossplay on all platforms from day one.
Yeah.
Hallelujah.
Man, that's wild.
Yeah. I was already optimistic of them doing this because of how they did it with Street Fighter V, or not Street Fighter VI. So I was like, it wouldn't make sense that they had cosplay for that game and not this game. It would be a really, really big like misstep. So I was feeling optimistic. So it's nice to have confirmation of it. And they also had crossplay in most capacities. To Exoprimal, because Exoprimal was crossplay when it came to matchmaking and playing with other players. But you know what I recently learned from James was that the crossplay in terms of like partying up with your friends across different platforms was not supported at launch. And I thought, oh, they're gonna add that in shortly after, like maybe 1 or 2 months after. It's like, no, it just recently got it, like how many months removed from the original launch. And it's like, wow, that's They took way too long with that, along with like all the other problems that Exoprimal faced, of course. But it's, you know, as long as I can partner up with friends who are on other platforms on Wilds on day one, then we're good. We're good. Which I'm optimistic that'll be the case for sure. It wouldn't mean it wasn't.
And it's kind of showed in this trailer a little bit, but they. But the trailer has too many cuts to make it seem very clear. But one thing we talked about last time was the seamless transition from cutscene to gameplay, the voice protagonist, things like that. So a lot of those things have been kind of bugbears in the side of like World and Rise in terms of just the user experience, especially in multiplayer. So really exciting stuff. Cool monsters. Crossplay is awesome, etc. So I don't know. After I played Rise, I kind of thought I was burnt out in Monster Hunter. The fact, if this was a 2024 game, I might still feel that. But the fact that it's like a thing to look forward to for next year, I don't know. It feels like a good time.
I think it's like this, like just a nice breather right now. Like, okay, mm-hmm. we have a lot of like other games to like get to anyway this year. Mm-hmm. It's just nice. Like, if Wilds came out this year, like, I just feel it'd be too much, man. I feel like this year already feels like too much, or not. We're barely halfway through it. And not like if Wilds just entered the stage like in the first 2 months of next year, I think it'll be a perfect time period. It's like mm-hmm. New Year, everyone feels a little bit refreshed, and it's a good way to like just start out the year with a bang.
We also got a new trailer at Summer Games Fest for the upcoming Metaphor ReFantazio. We do have a release date for this, right?
Yeah, that's October 11. I believe that's
only two weeks after Episode Agus.
Yeah. So yeah, we did get a release date for Episode Agus. We'll talk about that right after this. But we got a trailer diving into the new archetype job system for Metaphor ReFantazio. And it's also a little bit of a story trailer. They call it the Awaken trailer. So this trailer is kind of a mix of a few different things. It shows a fair bit of gameplay, a fair bit of like the animated cutscenes. Which I forget which studio was doing that or if that was Tilled, but they look pretty nice, as well as diving into like the archetypes that the characters can select. I forget if these are all new or if people have been able to glean these from previous trailers, but we see things such as like Mage, Knight, Magic Knight, Brawler, Pugilist. I'm not sure the difference between a Brawler and a Pugilist. Healer, Gunner. Players will use a resource called Mag to awaken new archetypes. And it talks about how the bond system will also interface with the archetype system, where certain archetypes will require bond levels with certain characters, which just seems smart to integrate like the two systems. And then I forget if this is new, but I'll mention it here. It has been announced that Yuji Himukai, who is a character designer from the Etrian Odyssey series, is working on a lot of the archetypes for Metaphor.
That's new. Yeah, they revealed that, which is... You know, they said it's appropriate because it's kind of like a 35th anniversary title, so it's kind of that. Like they acknowledge that, like, hey, a lot of the DNA in terms of like having different classes in Etrian Odyssey and having different party compositions with those different jobs, like it's very much like within the same DNA, bleeding over into Metaphor, in this instance, which is, you know, it's a nice acknowledgement of that.
So you're telling me this is more Etrian Odyssey than less SMT, right?
It's kind of a fusion of both. I mean, I'm not going to say it's like more one or the other, but you definitely see elements of both, right? Like, this one still has like the almost like a press turn system where you'll gain more turns if you hit a weakness, you know? Interesting thing about this game is like, I didn't know about this from the previous trailer, but this actually has like a front and back row system. So like, there'll be like jobs where like that'll only have skills that can only like work in the back row, for example. And then like there'll be like a commander job archetype that like has formation type skills that manipulate that and like maybe grant certain bonuses on depending on row position, which is interesting. Yeah, they also have like a soul hacker class, which, you know, we last saw that in Xenoblade 3.
That's true.
They also have a system called Traveler's Voices, and this is a really interesting one. There's like your network integration, you know, how like in modern Persona titles, they like, you know, you kind of see like what other people did with their in-game day, like, because if people are like, I don't know what to do today, like, you know, you can see what other people on the network did. For this one, for like difficult battles, you can actually consult like a system called the Traveler's Voices. You can actually see what other players' party compositions and levels were during an encounter, and like if you meet those like those prerequisitions, you can actually just switch on the fly to that player's like party composition and play the battle out that way of like what they use.
That's a lot of features that you see in modern gacha games these days when they release like a super challenging battle. Mm-hmm. I think it's an Honkai Star Rail, like if you do the Memory of Chaos, it will be like, oh, it's like, I can't beat this, what do I do? And then you could check your friend list and who cleared it, and you could see their team comp. And the same thing with Grand Blue as well. When they release a certain mode in the Tower of Babel, it's basically mm-hmm. the same thing. You copy their team layout. If you have it, you know, it automatically sets you up just like that, right?
Yeah. So, yeah. Same, you know,
same thought process. But that's generally, I think that's like a really cool feature. Like it's something that's like not really in your face in your way. It also just like lets you see like what your friends did for like a certain encounter. It's like, oh, what was like their plot process? Because like the way that the game's structured is like it allows for so many different party compositions and tactics. Because like since all of your party can like share the same job archetype, you can have like a party of like all mages or all knights or all pugilists and so forth. So it's definitely one way to like kind of see what the thought process is of like everyone involved in a certain like maybe difficult boss.
I seem much more interested in this game now. Like when my first thought process when I was seeing this game back then was like it was just like Persona in a different skin. That's like my impression of it, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But now it's like okay, it's totally not Persona at all.
Right? Yeah. I think it's still a common misconception that it's like a Persona reskin. It's like it does share a little bit of like the Persona DNA for sure. But I think it's ultimately trying to do its own thing by borrowing ideas from other of Atlas's IP together. Make its own identity on its own in that way, which is pretty interesting. It's also cool that different archetypes will actually like affect like the real-time aspect of battles itself too. So like you say, you have like the pugilist archetype, it actually changed like your on-field weapon in the action segments. So you can attack with like punches instead, or like if you have like a certain job archetype, like a dragoon, you'll have like a spear instead, and then you have like different abilities. So oddly enough, way more expanded like what Kuro or Daybreak does with its real-time aspect and its battle system.
Released like a big gameplay demonstration showing a lot of that with the on-field like action gameplay and then the battle like you described as kind of more press turning gameplay. Talk about synthesis, like you can do like combination attacks based on the archetypes that are present in the party. And then there's a lot of enemies that are shown. My favorite is that there's like these goblins. They look like they're numerous and not that hard because there's lots of them, but they're like jacked as shit. There's like jacked up goblins. Like,
Like
hell yeah.
I love the fish men. Like it's like half of them is like a fish, like the top half of a fish. And then, but they have like human legs. And I'm like, hell yeah. That's a peak character or enemy design right there.
They're the reverse mermaid.
Yeah. So I think it like the more they've shown this, the more I've really grown interested in this game. Okay, they're trying to create something really special.
I try to like circle one game per month, and this is my October game.
Mm-hmm.
Unless Nintendo announces like Xenoblade 4 or something like that.
It's like it's October,
well,
by the way.
Well,
like,
well that's the thing about Nintendo is that they're gonna have a Nintendo Direct sometime in June, and they're gonna say these bangers are releasing in 2 months. Like that's how it always goes. So we'll
remember what we said. We said that people are gonna get filtered by the battle theme before.
Oh well, you can just.
I think that's my one like worry. That is my one worry with metaphors. Like they, like when it shows like the menus throughout the game and that extended gameplay this demonstrated, it's like a lot of like loud chanting and yelling. I'm like, dude, I don't want like intense yelling and chanting as I'm just trying to like menu the game. I'm like trying to decide my party composition, and you just have this going, oh my god, wait.
I still would take that over the Xenoblade 3 method where every battle theme became the chain battle theme, or when you open the menu, it becomes the menu theme, and then you can't hear the fucking background music.
Yeah, that for sure, but I don't know. There has to be some balance. Like, let me be a little bit chill during the menus.
Fantasio, a lot of details, a lot of cool news. We have the extended gameplay video shows everything you'd possibly want to see in terms of how the game looks and plays. So give that a look at up on the site. We did also get a look for a game, one of the very first games that had a release date this year. This is Black Myth Wukong. This is from Game Science, one of the first games that was at least outwardly advertised as being powered by Unreal Engine 5 last year in December. They said they were going to be releasing on August 20th. I remember it was like the very furthest date out, and I said, no way it hits August 20th. It showed back up at Summer Games Fest, and they said, yep, Black Myth Wukong is releasing on August 20th. The one update that they said is that the Xbox release will come after the PC and PlayStation 5 release to meet the quality standards. interpret that how you will. So PlayStation and PC, still August 20th. Xbox, undated at some point after. The trailer itself is mostly a cinematic trailer. They show a number of creatures, but mostly it's the protagonist walking. He pulls a piece of like a twig out of his ear that turns into a spear. Sounds like I made it up, but I didn't. But that's where he gets his weapons from. And then at the end, he is facing like four giant like golem things.
Yeah, if you're looking for like a physical copy for this game, like the that's like that you can get a physical copy of this game. It's like only like special editions, like a deluxe edition and collector's edition. That'll have like a bunch of goodies that I listed on the article for it. But I think the weirdest thing about the delay on the Xbox is like it was very unclear in the press release itself whether it was gonna get delayed, because they mentioned that verbatim on the press release that we got. Note that a release date for the physical edition or editions is pending. So one, we don't know what the release date for the physical editions are necessarily, and the release timing for the Xbox Series X/S version will be disclosed at a later time. And on its face, that doesn't really tell you whether it's delayed or they're just gonna reveal it at the Xbox showcase, since that's around the corner from when we're recording. So you actually have to go to the official website Q&A. For them to explicitly say, we're delaying it. It's like, okay, why couldn't you just say that in the press release? So it was just like a really weird mishap. Got that all sorted out. Hopefully the delay isn't too bad for Xbox players.
Apparently it is playable behind closed doors at Summer Games Fest, so I don't know if Adam or James are going to be able to get on that, but it'd be really cool if they did. And if they're able to talk about it, we'll report on it back here. I believe this other one was also on the show floor. Was that Kingdom Come Deliverance 2? Did that show up on the
queue? Yeah, that's Summer Games Fest. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Yeah. So we got a new trailer for Kingdom Come Deliverance 2. Of course, this was formally announced and got a release window back in April. It's slated to release this year. We don't have a very specific date. So the trailer we got at Summer Games Fest, they call it the Saints and Sinners trailer. It is basically a story trailer for the game. It focuses on Henry, and what I've researched is another character named Hans, who was an important character in the first game. I've not played the first game, but the trailer almost frames it like two protagonists, but all the press release says that Henry is protagonist and Hans is just your bro. So that's how I'm interpreting it. The trailer also features a character called Father Godwin, who I looked up is also a character from the first game. So very clearly a game that is a sequel. I know that sounds like der, but
huge.
What I'm saying though is that makes me like, I don't know if they stated explicitly, like it's a very boilerplate FAQ. Can you enjoy this without playing the first game? And the publisher and developer is always encouraged to say, of course you can, sort of thing. But it makes me personally, if I want to play the second game, like I really should play the first for multiple reasons, not only just the story, but just to see like, you know, what they're, you know, how the scope has changed or their aspirations from game to game. But the trailer shows a fair bit of, you know, gameplay from the first person perspective, cutscenes. It's a good trailer.
Yeah, I still try to get over how much more handsome Henry looks in the sequel. He looks like an innocent lad, baby face in the first game. And now he's like all more grown up. Like, oh, Henry, how you've grown.
The next trailer that we got was released a few days before the Summer Games Fest. This is for SteamWorld Heist 2, which was first released back in April. So this trailer is extended gameplay. It talks a little bit about how the game is set up, a little bit about the overworld exploration, and then goes into a lengthy kind of demo of an early game heist, an early game mission. So for someone like me who didn't really know, like, how does this game actually play? It answers that question from the on-the-side perspective. It's kind of framed a lot like a tactical game, like from what I would typically my brain puts as an isometric perspective, only from the side view, in terms of using abilities that have certain areas of effect, positioning from your character against the enemies, different gear that has different like trajectories or reach. It talks about two different characters and kind of the different ways you can outfit them early in the game, how bounties work. things like that. So just it's a gameplay overview for those that aren't familiar with SteamWorld Heist, like myself, kind of gives you like, oh, that's kind of what this game looks like and plays like. So that was published earlier this week. And again, the game is coming out in August, so about 2 months from today. Here's an update that was posted for Megaton Musashi Wired from Level 5. This was published on their website as a big news blog, I believe, for the 3.1 version update. And as far as I can tell, Josh, this update isn't dated, but it is intended to come soon. I went through the post and I couldn't find a date, but they're saying, as far as I can tell, here's what we have planned for the update, but we don't know quite when it'll launch yet.
Yeah, pretty much. And you know, it's kind of like the previous releases of Megaton Musashi, that were only in Japan. They continue support throughout the lifespan of this game, like just more new stages and content and stuff like that. So it's nice to see them just doing this with this release, because it's already filled to the brim with like a shitload of content, but they're adding more new, like two more new robots, rogues, that are fairly late game, like end game, where you can start obtaining them. New end game boss fights. One of the pain points for players who spend a lot of time with it is like there's this Megaton 2 difficulty, that was like difficult to ramp up to, because like once you have a mech that can deal with Megaton 1, like just the regular Megaton difficulty, like even if you got to like the later stages of that, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're set up for success in Megaton 2. Like the first stage of Megaton 2, like you'll probably not deal enough damage and get timed out, and you're like, wow, what went wrong? Why was I not prepared for this at all? And it takes kind of like a bit of fiddling at the moment to kind of properly get equipment that's powerful enough for that difficulty. And there's even more difficulties beyond that. So the part of the major, one of the major things in this upcoming version update is to introduce stages that are on the lower end of Megaton 2 to start getting you properly geared and prepared for them. Which is, you know, it's good to see that's kind of like
a really big smart goal on its face, because there's always, it always kind of feels like, you know, you got to go bigger, you got to go harder. Here's the new super duper boss, but instead they're like, yeah, we're gonna add some new things, but also we're gonna add a few that are in the highest tier of difficulty, but on the lower end of that, just to help make the ramp smoother.
Yeah,
like that just seems very cognizant of player feedback. It just seems like really player focused. Like, okay, instead of just keep putting the hat on a hat and just make it, you know, harder and harder and bigger, like, okay, let's take some feedback and actually like kind of smooth out the edges, both on the lower and the higher end. So I think
really good at just listening to feedback. Yeah, so much appreciated. So it's good to see. Continue to pray for the ongoing success of that game.
And then here's a tiny little update. A planned release for September is Reinatus. Reinatus is being developed by Natsume Atari, published by Furyu, has drawn a lot of comparisons to Versus 13, Virum Rex, whatever Nomura has wanted to publish but couldn't, etc. It was announced back in May that Reinatus would have a crossover with Neo: The World Ends With You. So that information is not new. The new information from June 3rd is that they published a new trailer that shows the crossover characters. So basically, your favorite World Ends With You 2 characters in Reinatus in that art style. Though they don't show the main character. I didn't play Neo: The World Ends With You, but the main character they only tease, which is a choice, I suppose. But I guess they
have that. It's okay. Everyone loves Shulka. So as long as Shulka shows up, everyone's good.
And then also speaking about Square Enix, this is kind of a surprise and kind of not. And we have talked about this in different contexts throughout the last couple of years, the Octopath Traveler series and Square Enix's initial refusal to have any consistency on their release platforms. So obviously there was the press release, shareholder meeting from a couple months back, where President Kiryu of Square Enix has mentioned that they are adopting a more multi-platform strategy. Of course, a couple days after that, we saw that the Kingdom Hearts games moved from Epic over to Steam. And kind of following in that same vein, two headlines here. Octopath Traveler is now available on PlayStation 4 and 5. Remember, Octopath Traveler, the original game, had never released on PlayStation. It was Switch exclusive and then got moved to PC and then Xbox. Octopath Traveler 2, opposite, never made its way to Xbox, is now available on Xbox. So Octopath Traveler 1 and 2 is now available on all the platforms. Finally.
Yeah,
release is finally coming to an end.
I think I stated all those things correctly, but it was such a weird puzzle pieces about what was available where and why and when.
Yeah, Octopath Traveler 2 is also available on Game Pass. And then they put back the first Octopath Traveler 1 up on Game Pass as well to celebrate. I think it's going to be, both of them are going to be up to like January of next year, I believe, on Game Pass. And then the first Octopath Traveler is available at a discount for PlayStation Plus members for like $40 USD. So, yeah, I mean, once again, if we thought Square Enix was done with shadow dropping, and then here we are, just bam, bam, shadow drop both of them, just wipe their hands clean. It's like, all right, we did it. Don't bug us anymore.
Yeah.
So I mean, they're there. At least that's great.
I mean,
it's kind of.
I mean, I don't know how much credit I get. They did say Octopath Traveler 2 was coming to Xbox a long time ago, and they never followed up until it's there now. So.
And they're also selling the first Octopath Traveler at full price, $60 on PlayStation. Just like, maybe wait for a discount. I don't know. There's also like a bundle for them on PlayStation for like $70 or $80. I forget. Yeah, I mean, at least they're there. I guess it's nice to have.
It feels more like a correction, where it's like, okay, but I guess now it's finally there. So
great.
But yeah, Octopath Traveler 2, especially, was a game that I don't, obviously, it's painting with a broad brush, but generally we thought very highly of. Octopath Traveler 1. Obviously, was the first of its type of kind of.
That reminds me. They released a stealth update for Octopath Traveler 2 this week added new endgame boss fights as well. So like you can challenge like the party members of the first Octopath Traveler in Octopath Traveler 2 as like endgame super bosses.
I think that's how people kind of figure out. It's like, oh, it's like it's coming to Xbox with that patch or something like that. That's what people are thinking.
So. Yeah, for people who really crave more challenging boss fights in at Endgame Octopath 2, there's new ones for you.
You just gotta find a broken game setup. That's kind of like the meta of this game. If you can't figure that out, it's like they're pretty brutal.
All right, I feel bad doing this. Please don't shoot me. But the next four games that we're gonna talk about, I binned together and I call them Souls Likes. Because these are games that when I see them, I shouldn't admit this, but sometimes I have trouble keeping them apart. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to detail what each of these games are with specific game bespoke details so I can talk about them each in turn without conflating them. So in no particular order, the first one is that we got a new trailer for Phantom Blade Zero. This is being published and developed by S Game. It was originally shown last year during the PlayStation Showcase. It showed back up this year during the Summer Games Fest Showcase. And I guess, I said Souls-like, but this looks more like a Sekiro or a Wolong-like with a much
It's kind of interesting. It has the pace of like a Ninja Gaiden, really. It's very fast and decisive. But it's like it has like the flashiness of like Bujin Gai on PS2. I don't know why I think of Bujin Gai, but I think of flashy combat, I think of Bujin Gai. So it actually looked really, really cool. Like I was really, really impressed. This new trailer was the one that closed out the Summer Games Fest showcase, and everyone was pretty stunned at what they had to show. Like it was a really, really strong way to close out that show. I think everyone who saw this trailer was like, oh yeah, I'm interested.
I know I'm beating a dead horse here and I'm repeating myself, but they're not afraid to show the UI. Like you can actually see like health bars, stamina bars with the item that the player that the trailer is actually playing has equipped. It's like, hell yeah, show me that shit. They did also say they're calling this a worldwide tour. The game is basically going to be playable at Summer Games Fest, which I believe Adam and James have stated they intend to see. So we'll see.
Hopefully, I hope so.
It's going to be at Gamescom TGS. So basically, it sounds like they're really ramping up marketing with a game that is in a playable state. So
I wonder when this releases. Yeah,
I say about November. My guess.
I wouldn't be surprised. It seems like it's something that is not that far away. So maybe a Q1 next year sort of game. We'll see.
I wonder if it's holiday this year or Q1 next year, because I would not like if this game came out around Monster Hunter Wild's time. That would not make me happy, let's say.
I don't know, maybe 2025 could be 2024 again. Big stack release all in the first 2 months.
One of the enemies that is being fought in the trailer, it has like katana stilts.
Yeah, I love that enemy. Like that. There's a lot of cool enemy designs in that game, but that one really, of course, stood out, and they really wanted you to see that one. Mm-hmm. It's like this lady who like walks around a katana stilts. Like, all right, so she's like, and like the animation was crazy. It's very, very cool.
I feel like I'm getting Stellar Blade vibes for the combat here, though. That's kind of like my impression of it.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
It's like a lot of those like QTE prompts. It's like, it feels like Stellar Blade to me.
I have to admit, the QTE prompts look kind of bad, to be honest. They kind of stick out like a sore thumb. I have to imagine there's like not finalized UI. I hope so.
I hope they shrink that gigantic triangle that you see like right there. It's bad.
Yeah. But other than that, it was a really good showing for the game.
Yeah, it looks really cool. The next one is a game we've talked about a few times over the last couple months, Anatria, The Last Song. This is the Souls-like being developed by Italian studio JAMA Games. So there was a little bit of confusion about the release day, whether the Xbox version is coming with it. That was already announced. It's being released on September 19th for all platforms, with Epic Store being the PC storefront. So the trailer at the Summer Games
Fest. This is coming to Steam as well.
It is?
Yes.
Oh, it's Steam and Epic. Okay, the trailer, little thumbnail. I guess it does show both. Okay, my apologies. It is coming to both Steam and Epic. But yeah, coming out for September 19th. And then the trailer for Summer's Games Fest was primarily a cinematic trailer, so a little less interesting on its face, except that, it does have a slightly different art direction compared to, like, the Bloodborne, Deathbound, Souls-like. It's got
it's hard to get a little like mad at it having a cinematic trailer, because there's an 8-hour demo on Steam still up. That's on true. There.
And they did also announce that demo just got kind of a refresh with fixing bugs and performance.
Yeah, good on them.
I don't know about content, but basically they just said, hey, we have a demo available. It's been available for a month, but we've updated it. So not quite early access in name, but kind of close, honestly.
I mean, there's a lot of content in that, so I imagine then,
I don't have the details here, but they're apparently within the demo, they've allowed, they have some sort of contest or speed runs or leaderboards set up where you can win prizes. I think some of the prizes include game keys or t-shirts. I don't know the details here, but they kind of put that into their...
That's fun, community events. That's cool.
And then also, if you pre-order, you get 72-hour early access. Of course.
Oh, yeah.
It might only be the deluxe version, but some versions of the game you do have access to the game early, depending on how much you pay. Also, I do like how one of the masks shown in the cinematic trailer is like got the super twirly mustache wig.
Yeah, they seem to have like a lot of fun designs. Like this definitely feels like a passion project for them, and for me, I like to root for the underdog, so I really hope it is successful and it turns out to be a great game.
Yeah, based on the other ones, I would say that this one is the most visually distinct, but that's not true. A game we'll talk about later is a little bit more visually distinct, but this one does have kind of an art style of its own, so it doesn't quite blend in as much as some of the other ones. So that is Phantom Blade Zero and Anatria, The Last Song. The third out of the four we're going to talk about is Deathbound. Now, Deathbound, the way that it works differently is that it has been described and marketed as a party-based Souls-like. What this is that you pick four characters that they use the word morph between them during combat, and they call it like morph abilities, morph strikes. Like, that's the crux of the gameplay, is how this works. And these characters, the new trailer from this week is called an overview trailer. The overview trailer talks about how the morphing system works, how each of the characters you're changing between has, it frames it like they have their own thoughts and beliefs and kind of morals. And somehow, it doesn't describe it in detail, but somehow these come into play when choosing your party. Like, certain characters, if you decide to outfit the four they have access to, will synergize or not synergize as well. It says bonuses or penalties, so that's kind of interesting. And then the gameplay shows, of course, the player morphing between characters. There's some sort of sync mechanic based on how effectively you use the different abilities in some way. So, and if you like freeze frame the trailer, it talks about like, oh, this penalty is minus 10% movement speed because these two characters have different views on science and faith. So things like that. So some interesting kind of wrinkles there. And then the trailer does show, like I've kind of been harping on, lots of UI, lots of gameplay, a few cutscenes as well. So no release date for this, except that it is slated to come out this year. Similar to Inatria, coming out on everything, though on PC additionally be on GOG. So it's coming out Steam, GOG, and Epic for PC. But yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and a demo is currently available. Don't know if that's the feedback on that, but there is a demo on the Steam page that's available now. This third one is the newest one, and this is the one that's likely furthest out. This is from a studio called Pasto Alpha, which is a Japanese indie studio. This game is called Witch of Oblivion. It is slated for Steam Early Access next year, and we got the official kind of announcement trailer for it this week. And I was looking at the press release to try to describe this. You play as a witch who basically is a fire mage who doesn't have complete control over her powers, I don't think. It talks about, you need to maintain, like, minimizing collateral damage and things like that. And then also, I was reading the press release, I like this. You have to keep an eye on her energy levels during exploration and battle, lest she'll suffer a narcoleptic need for sleep that will transport her to the last tree she visited.
Dang, it's just like me.
I was like, I like that. That's relatable. So she has a burst of energy. She goes out and gets as much done as she can until she needs a nap.
That's so, right.
I don't know. That just seems kind of fun. So this has it's not cel-shaded, I don't think, but it has kind of more of that 3D animated art style. So very visually distinct compared to the other games. But still also, like, a lot of the art looks a little bit early, but that's, I'm not criticizing that. The game's coming into early access next year is the plan. A little bit of the furthest out, but this is a decent first look at the game. I do like how in the trailer she's yawning and falling asleep while, like, fire comes in from around her. So that's kind of how they're really teeing up what this character is. And again, that's Witch of Oblivion. So kind of a silly premise in a genre that doesn't always take itself so silly. Mm-hmm. But it takes itself more seriously. Yeah. So I don't know. It's kind of a fun little niche to kind of nest your indie game into.
I like that.
And we'll kind of keep going on the indie front here. A lot of these are games that we've talked about kind of at length as they've been announced in previous years. But this year, they have a few new information or a new demo available. We talked a little bit about Keylocker. So Keylocker is slated to come out this summer. It's now available or will be available on Switch as well as the other platforms. And we'll have a demo available with the Steam Next Fest. This one is actually a game... I misspoke. This is actually a game, this next one, that we have not talked before. It is a side-scroller beat-em-up RPG called Immortal Hunters, and it is now available as a demo on Steam. It was shown in the Guerrilla Collective streaming event a couple days ago. So this is very much like arcade multiplayer beat-em-up. Like, I always associate it with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but I'm sure there's other less silly comparisons to make. But get three bros, work your way left to right as distinct characters fighting hordes of monsters. The art style here is very like Western comic booky. Looks pretty fun. Kind of like a grimdark setting for it.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
slated to come out this summer, but has a demo available now. So kind of similar with Keylocker. Here's a game that you were able to go, I believe, I'm not sure if it was hands-on with, but you talked about this game last PAX West. This is Demon School, a game very similar to Keylocker, where we've been covering this game with kind of incremental updates for a few years now. This is the game that's been compared to things such as,
I feel like Persona.
Persona 1, Shin Megami Tensei,
I remember before I said it seems similar to Persona 1 and 2, I think, and then someone said, well, actually a more better comparison was something else, but I don't quite remember what it was.
Yeah, I don't know.
But anyways, it's got more of a tactical, like, grid-based gameplay style to it. And the trailer from this year's update is called Meet the Students. And the idea here is that it talks about the playable characters, Faye, Newt, Namako, and Destin. It talks about their roles, the abilities they can do in combat, and very specifically, like, in the grid-based combat system, here's how their ability works, how many allies or enemies it affects, etc. So kind of going into, like the final polish of mechanics being sorted out and how the animations work and how the game's actually going to, like, be balanced.
Yeah, like it's an interesting game because you cannot move diagonally in that game. It's only like
far away
cardinal directions, sort of call it.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, cardinal directions. So, you really have to, like, think about, like, your placement in the game more so than, like, most other strategy RPGs that allow for a more free form of movement. So, I'm looking forward to see how the final game shapes up. It does look pretty cool. Has a really great art style going for it.
I feel it looks a little different from this current trailer. Do they change up the visual a bit, or I'm just misremembering things?
That depends on when the last time you've seen it, because it's been in development for a while, so they might have.
Yeah, it would be interesting to pull up a trailer from, like, 2020, 2024 to see how it's refined.
Yeah.
But yeah, and it will get a new demo a couple days from the time of recording, so by the time you listen to this, likely already up with the Steam Next Fest, so it'll get an updated demo. Another game that's getting a demo with the Steam Next Fest, this is a game we've covered once before. It is called Sky Oceans Wings for Hire. This is being published by PQ by a developer called Octecto Studios. And this is a game that is very explicitly and outwardly being described as a love letter to Skies of Arcadia. That very clearly that is their inspiration. They want another game of that style, of that flavor. And then that's what Sky Oceans Wings for Hire is trying to hit. It does, however, have a much different art style. It has an art style that's kind of Wind Waker-ish. It's not quite chibi, but it's stylized. Maybe there's a better point of comparison, but that's what my brain is.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, the actual art style itself, like, in terms of, like, not the 3D models, is, like, sort of like a Saturday morning cartoon. But in terms of, like, but like you said, it is more like a GameCube anime era-esque type of aesthetic in terms of, like, the in-game visuals.
That's where it's kind of hilarious. Like, with everyone, when they see the CERN self-shaded, they always call it GameCube era. It's like Bad New Hunter, X Hunter.
And it is reminiscent. Like, there definitely was, like, a niche of those titles at GameCube. It's like, your mind kind of drifts to that. It's like, yeah, kind of.
I think it's an art style that really kind of lends itself well to sub-HD. Obviously, this game is coming out for PC and PS5, but it's that sort of art style for it. Though I don't know if I'm gelling with the 2D art that much, and that's just a personal thing. I'm just not sure I like the design on a personal level. Like, they've got kind of like the red triangle noses that makes everyone look like they have a cold. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense.
It's kind of got that Western, I don't know, Kel Arts animation style to it, Cartoon Network sort of thing, which it might look good in gameplay, but just from the trailer, that's just a personal thing. But in terms of whether it hits the feel of Skies of Arcadia, I think it kind of does. It shows a lot of, like, spaceship or skyship dogfighting and customization. And of course, that's
the turn-based battle sounds like all your party members, like, on, like, their separate, like, you know, ships, like dogfighting planes. Mm-hmm. You know, so you and then you have different ways to, like, customize their planes, and then there's, like, a relationship system as well. There's even, like, different, like, mood statuses and so forth, so that provide status boosts and all that stuff. So, you know, it's they seem to have, like, a very ambitious ideas for the game. Hopefully, it all comes together. They haven't provided a specific trailer, but it's coming out for pretty much all modern platforms, and they're gonna be part of a Steam Next Fest, so a demo for it will be coming soon.
Continuing on with games that have demos, this next one is a game that we first covered a couple years ago when its first demo came out. That is a game called Kriegsfront Tactics, being developed by Toj Productions. So we first covered this game on our website in January 2020, where it was described as a procedural turn-based mecha tactics RPG. So my brain goes to Front Mission with a little bit better, I guess, production values. So we haven't covered it since then, though I'm sure there have been incremental updates for those who have been following the game directly. The big news here, the reason why we're covering it again here in 2024, is that they have said they're creating a new trailer that they're calling the Prologue trailer. And the reason
it's a new vertical slice. It's a new demo, not trailer.
Sorry, I said trailer, but my brain meant demo, a new demo. Prologue demo. There is a new trailer as well. And the reason why they wanted to do a Prologue demo is that because it's going to be more focused on the RPG aspects. And, you know, this is from the developer. When we say RPG, we're not talking just about stats and levelings. We're talking about world, character, stories, narrative elements. So the new demo, it seems like they've got an existing demo been out since 2022 that is specifically more about the gameplay combat. And the new demo is more focused on teeing up as a vertical slice of the narrative, which of course will integrate into the gameplay and combat. So I kind of like that. They're just saying, hey, we're ready and we've been working on the game for a few years now. We're going to have a different vertical slice that shows off another aspect of the game more clearly. So my understanding is that when this demo comes out, it won't be available until July. So they've announced this demo a little bit early. But my understanding is that come July 18th, the game will have two available demos, a combat-focused one and this Prologue demo, which will be kind of a narrative-focused one. So yeah, I think that's very interesting for a tactical RPG.
Yeah, I've had this game on my radar for, feels like forever, so hopefully it really comes together. Like after I've been really very lukewarm, let's say, on the Front Mission remakes, so I'm hoping this properly scratches that itch, because I haven't really been that impressed with the other efforts on the Front Mission, other Front Mission remakes.
They better not fuck up Free if they ever plan on remaking that.
They do plan on remaking that. Let's just say I'm not very optimistic that they're gonna nail it. Yeah. But yeah, this game looks really, really cool. They have a really interesting art style, aesthetic, and just presentation. So, hoping for the best. Really cool.
And this last game doesn't have a demo, but is now available in early access, so you can play it. This is a side-scrolling roguelike called Dragon Is Dead. So kind of like the 2D, I'm not sure, like when you talk about like a 2D Souls-like, I'm not sure like what is the point of comparison, because there's been so many. I'm not sure which ones have landed more than others. But this is like Dread Delusion, not Dread Delusion, that was the other May game. Dark Devotion was one that I played a few years back.
Mm.
But this game kind of has that same sort of aesthetic. Talks about, of course, like the gearing system through the roguelike, you know, repeating boss fights, etc. It has a character that looks like Dark Souls 3 boss with like the flowing white mane. This is, out of all the games we've talked about, this is the one that it is available in early access, so you can play it. But it is the one that has, I think, visually, it's the hardest to pick out of a crowd. And I try not to say that like for a game that's being developed, but
yeah, but it's like, you know, everyone's is striving towards like a similar idea. So it is sometimes kind of gets that unfortunate, suffers that unfortunate, like, hey, it's hard to have a visual identity when there's so much on the market.
Trying to thread that needle to something that no one else has quite done. So if anyone here has time with the early access and we can kind of pull out what this game is doing well, and maybe at that point we can say, oh, this is what this game does that the other ones haven't quite done. This is, again, Dragon Is Dead, available on Steam now. Doesn't have a slated full release window, and it is set right now as a budget title, so it's $19.99 to get into the early access. So we'll see kind of what the reception is on Steam for this game, and keep our eye out on it. And this last one, this was one that you just covered earlier today. I probably could have put this up with some of the earlier announcements, Tribe Nine and Neon Blood. So this is a game called Abyss Cross Zero, or Abyss X Zero. It is from Studio Pixel Punk, the same studio that did Unsighted. And this is a game that it's an action RPG that is coming to PC at some point. This is an announcement trailer for it. It has kind of like that Mega Man Legends, like 3D art style to it, only in better fidelity. And
yeah, it's like primarily they describe it as like a 3D Metroidvania, but there's definitely like work in progress footage that showed like, hey, there's actually like RPG elements to it, like pretty significant ones. It is coming to PC, but there's also other unannounced platforms, so they haven't revealed those yet. We don't know any sort of a release date or window as of yet. But what they've shown so far seems really, really promising. Like, I think they've knocked it out of the park in terms of like what they wanted to show for this game.
It totally captures that Mega Man Legend art style.
Yeah. So, and then you take control of two different characters, Codename A and Codename Z, and there's sort of like from opposite sides that are like, you know, meant to fight each other. So, it's kind of like a nice early look at that game. So, like, this wasn't the reveal trailer. There's like they call it the official premiere trailer, but they revealed this game before, like several months ago. But we just didn't know whether it was like really in our scope. And then after they showed off more of the game, like through development behind the scenes, I'm like, I think it falls in our range.
Mm-hmm. And that was a lot of trailers that we just went through. So lots of exciting stuff on the horizon. And a lot of it's not quite dated yet, but a lot of it is slated for 2024. So
it's not even the end of it. There's still more games to put up, and then there's still the Xbox showcase, the PC gaming show, Ubisoft.
And then whatever the hell Nintendo's going to show. So yeah.
Nintendo Dragon Age, whatever that is.
Yeah, and this is basically part one. Next week, we'll be back with basically another onslaught of announcements, probably. So look forward to that. But we decided to hold this podcast anyways, so that we would not be absolutely swarmed next week. But we probably still will be. So to start on the down slope of the end of this podcast, we do have a couple more dates rundown here for a few other updates. Oh, this one, I was going to talk about this one back with Metaphor Re and Fantasio, but then it slipped my mind. We did finally get a official date for the Persona 3 Episode Aegis DLC. We already knew it was coming. It was part of their season pass, which has mostly been cosmetics. It was slated for December. Atlus has officially announced that Episode Aegis is set for September 10th. I read in Universe that September 10th is Aegis's like official canon birthday, or I don't know if that's true or not, and whether or not it matters. But if it does, I guess that's neat.
Is that the canon birthday for Aegis, Chow? I don't remember.
I have no idea.
Right, I thought Chow would know.
I'm typing in Google.
I own a lot of Aegis figures. What tell me.
Aegis birthday.
September 10th, 1999. That's what the tells me.
I own a lot of Aegis figures, but it's like I don't pay attention to like fictional characters' birthday, except for March 7th. That's the only one I know because that's their name.
The only characters I pay attention to are the ones that have my birthday. Like I know Akihiko from Persona 3 has my birthday.
Yeah.
So that one I'll order because I like Akihiko and I like my birthday. I guess. I mean.
Yeah, but like for me, I personally don't know like fictional characters' birthdays. It feels like it's just like some trivial thing to me. Because it could be just like some random date, right?
And then I think most people listening to this is aware, but just in case, episode Aegis is for Persona 3 Reload, the rebranding of what was originally called Persona 3 The Answer. So it's an epilogue story arc featuring Aegis. So The Answer is now Episode Aegis in for the Reload remake. I know it's been a little bit contentious. It's a lot more dungeon focused and a lot less story focused, and depending on your just style and what you favor, some people really like that, some people really don't. So I think Adam falls on really liking it. I'm not sure where
me and Adam are fine with it. I think there's like just some fundamental like
I absolutely gameplay that's
there's like some bad gameplay parts about it, like for example, like a lot of the bosses of that game are in that and The Answer have like elemental weaknesses, but they also like if they also have the skill to evade their weakness. So like if they're weak to ice, obviously, you want to hit them with ice attacks, but they have a skill, evade ice. So
it might as well not be a weakness at that point.
It's
right?
Like, God damn it. It's like, yeah, and that makes it really frustrating because like a lot of those bosses are not pushovers; they're very threatening.
Yeah, this game makes the original game look like a joke when it comes to difficulty, in my opinion. So, and imagine playing the original version when you can't control the AI.
Yeah, it was brutal. So it was. We'll see what they do on that front. I'm pretty interested to see how they adapt it. I don't want them to make it easy because Reload is I fall asleep sometimes when I play.
Did you went and beat Reload recently?
I didn't finish Reload yet. I just think I just so mind-numbingly easy that it's just like it's hard to get excited.
But get what I'm saying. It's so much easier than the original.
It's really it's really easy. Like man, it's like I didn't play on hard mode. It's like
I think you cannot get like the original difficulty back unless you set it to merciless mode. I think that's how it works. I think. But at that point, you're like,
Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see what they do with the answer. Reload's okay. I have my gripes with it.
I'm gonna be the guy that's gonna set this game to very easy mode just because I hate this game and I just want to get through it as fast as possible.
And then you know, I won't spoil what the story is, but there's definitely some odd story moments. Odd story moments in the answer. It's like, all right, I guess. let's say our main character got a lot more haters because of that character's decisions in the original answer.
I feel like she's not the only culprit. Even some other characters.
I mean, I won't say it's only that character, but.
Some character will be like, oh yeah, I totally support you, but wait, this is like totally against what your morals in the original game are like.
That's all we'll say. So we'll see what they do for this new release of the answer.
Maybe some people are looking forward to it.
Couple other updates. As of the day we're recording, Dungeons of Hinterberg, which is a RPG/social sim set in the Alps, which is slated to release later this summer in July, has now a playable demo on Steam as of June 8th. So you can go ahead and play through a single in-game day in that game.
Mm-hmm.
Honkai Star Rail is getting its version 2.3 update late June, June 19th, called Farewell Pinakoni. Pinakoni? Pinakoni. I have no idea how to pronounce it. Pinakoni. Koni. Okay, what is that?
That's the world that you're in the second version point. And the story is just kind of concluded, but I don't think it's kind of concluded. It's kind of like a jailbait ending, you know what I'm saying? It's like, oh, like you thought this is the end, but no, it's not. I think, you know?
So, you just described that as jailbait?
I think switch and bait, I think that's why.
Oh yeah, switch and bait, yeah. That makes sense. The other one, okay. not good. The other one, not good. Good correction.
And it introduces the character Firefly?
Yes, this is what every person is saving their roles are for. She is, like, this girl that you kind of met on a date, and then... she gets killed, but she doesn't really get killed, and then there's all this thing to it, and everybody like just falls in love with this character. And she also gets to transform into a robot, into a Kamen Rider kind of thing, and people just loves this character.
Yeah, she seems like Honkai Star Rail's like golden child right now.
It totally like looks like Destiny Gundam, like the way it looks with the wings.
Yeah. So they also show like a new like animated trailer at the Summer Games Fest, like, you know, teasing her. So people are just waiting for a date on when her banner is going to go up so they can go all out pretty much.
The Summer Game Fest also had like another trailer too. They had like this trailer for like March 7th.
Oh yeah,
she switched to a different path. Like
so it's like it's not a new outfit that they're selling. It's like an actual gameplay thing. I thought
now she could like focus on the path of the hunt. I think people were disappointed because she's just a 4-star. I think people were hoping that it would be like a 5-star, and now it's like, oh, it's 4-star. She can't be mad at it at this point. You know, who knows? I mean, this game, I have not found a single character to be bad. They all come useful in some different ways. Even like the worst character at the beginning of the game, like Herta, she turns out to be like the most broken character for like this different mode, like this different endgame mode. So it's like every character has their use in this game. So. Can't be bad.
Okay, and people are saying that you're Honkai is going back to China. Are we going back to China?
They're going to Lofu. Now you get to meet like this. I think they already like spoiled like the patch characters that are after this patch.
Okay.
But the thing is, there's lots of like story threads that are not left kind of solved in the space China the Lofu.
Mm-hmm.
So people were kind of upset about that back then, but maybe now it's finally resolved because it just goes back and you got like this kind of like sequel bait ending and you're like, what the hell? It's like, and it's like, are we going to go back there?
We're pretty divisive things because people are like, I don't want to go back to Space China.
Yeah, I fucking hate Space China. No offense. The story kind of like sucks. You get like this villain that came out of nowhere with no build up and then it's like, it's over and now we leave? It's like, what?
All right.
Pinakoni is good. I'll say that. It even steals a plot twist from Trails of Azure kind of thing. That's what a lot of people compares it to. But yeah. Looking forward to getting out of space China if we can.
Following up from talking about space China, somehow. I wasn't expecting that. In September, we're going to get official mod support for Baldur's Gate 3. So that's kind of, I think they've stated that that's kind of be like the last major update for Baldur's Gate 3.
Oh, okay.
They're going to be moving on to their whatever their next big project is. Larian has grown immensely, tremendously over the last couple of years.
So they've and they've already mentioned they're moving away from Baldur's Gate. There's no Baldur's Gate 4 coming from them. Not Larian specifically. They just
and reading between the lines, it seems like, and this is just a conjecture, I don't know anything, is that the relationship between them and Wizards of the Coast has not been great. Like, it was on one of the stage shows where basically Sven said, like, the people who the partnership was, you know, agreed to it, so many of them weren't even there anymore on Wizards' side, primarily, it seemed like. So, not 100% sure what happened behind the scenes, but it seems like Larian is happy with just being one and done with Baldur's Gate, and I'm guessing, and Wizards of the Coast is eager to get someone else on board, because they have a powerful IP on their hand and don't know what to do with it. So we'll see. But yeah, modding support, real cool. Kind of give the game infinite life, so to speak, coming in September.
Mm-hmm.
Metal Slug Tactics, I mentioned this in passing earlier. This is a game that was announced a while ago, but like it originally planned to release in 2022. Then it got pushed back. Then it kind of went dark for a while. The developer, Lakeir Studio and Dotemu have resurfaced, basically saying it is still planning to come out. It's slated for fall of this year, and they had a new trailer for it. In addition, they said it's not just coming to Switch and PC. It'll also be coming to PlayStation and Xbox, both last-gen and current-gen platforms. So supposedly, it's alive and well, releasing on everything at some point this fall. So that's
And then you're also going to have a demo for it as part of Steam Next Fest, so people who are excited for it can get their hands on it very, very soon with a demo. Mm-hmm. So that's cool to see. You know, well, hopefully that is awesome, you know. So I've been looking forward to it, so hopefully I'm crossing my fingers.
Another game that kind of went dark and has resurfaced is Wizardry Variants Daphne. This is a mobile game set in the Wizardry IP, so very hardcore dungeon crawler that was set as a mobile game, announced in 2022 for release in 2023. It was later announced that it would come to Steam. So mobile and Steam did not hit its 2023 date. The studio 2 Pro has announced that it will be releasing in October 2024 for the mobile version, which was the original version they announced. They are still planning on a Steam release that will release at some point after the mobile version. The studio on their Twitter page for the game has kind of been doling out little bite-sized updates and details about like things like auto movement and dungeons, how traps can be set, things like that. So still kind of plugging away at it. Didn't hit its original release window, but for those that want hardcore dungeon crawling on the go, be out at some point in October. And that's the whole list. Well, I say that's the whole list, but there's a lot of games that we could have covered but didn't that have kind of been shown or will be shown again throughout this weekend. Like, I think on IGN, there was kind of an introductory story trailer for Sacrifire, and I think Sacrifire is also going to show up on another streaming thing.
It's just going to be a lot of, like, you know, they have their whole strategy planned out, like some indie games will be like, will show up on 2 to 3 streams, you know.
Yeah.
All lots of different things. It's like, it's, you know, there's a lot to kind of just cover.
The developers behind Chris Tales have announced their turn-based RPG Prisma, but that might get another showing at the PC Game Show. Another RPG that was announced from a developer that I'm not familiar with, called Beloved Rapture, is now available on Steam with a demo alongside the Steam Next Fest slated for this year. There's a few others that we might or might not cover once, because a lot of these things were like, is that an RPG? Is it not? Do we cover it? Do we want to cover it? Sort of thing. But yeah, so we have not been
genre site.
Yeah, so we have not covered everything exhaustively, but we have tried to hit all the highlights. And like I said, we will be following up next week with anything that we have slipped through the gaps this week, and of course everything that is yet to be announced. So if this was helpful, you know, give us a thumbs up, give us a rating, give us a comment. We'd love to see those. Tune in next week where we're going to do the same thing again. Of course, thank you so much to Josh for holding down the fort on the site. And the reason why I can say we have these news posts on the site is because you did most of them. You did the plurality of them. And I do know that it's been a team effort from everyone. So I know it's the busiest time of year for our site. And thank you, everyone that has contributed on our end for those. And then, of course, we'll be reporting back with, I think by next week, James and Adam should both be back. So we might have the full crew again. We can talk about their on-site experience, meeting, you know, staff alumni over in LA, meeting, you know, our connections and friends over at some of the publishers, the PR agencies. So we'll also just follow up in general, like, how was Summer Games Fest? So that'll be kind of fun to talk about hopefully next week. If not next week, the week after. Any other concluding thoughts? Oh, yeah, and I guess thank you to Josh and Chow for showing up shorthanded with me on this podcast.
It's still a pretty long episode, to be honest with you. There's just a lot of news to cover.
Yeah, we knew it would be. Any other final thoughts before we start wrapping up? And
It's always going to be weird without E3. It's going to take a long adjustment period. I'm still not a big fan of the Summer Games Fest structure and like having 10 million live streams, you know, spread out at so many days.
It feels going to Anime Expo count too. Wouldn't that be a thing?
No, it's Anime Expo is its own thing because it's like Anime Expo is just like it's a convention. It only lasts for a few days, only through a weekend, and it's not like scattershot. You know, everything's kind of all consolidated. So you know, I mean, I don't know. Summer Games Fest is always not. Hopefully, they find a better structure. This can't be the way forward forever.
I do think, like, if one of the, like, if X, this is just an example, if Xbox said, we're going to do our showcase in July, you think that would just be like, you know, you'd get more eyeballs around it rather than it being swarmed with everything else, especially for, like, the Wholesome Games or the Future Games or the Guerrilla Collective. If they said, we're going to do ours in late May or we're going to do ours in August, like, that way it's just not a swarm of things fighting for attention. I don't know.
It's just it's like you have all these streams that, like, have, like, cool indie games, but it's hard to, like, get eyes on them because it's like, oh yeah, we're also like the eighth indie stream that showing off indie games today. It's like, okay, great, you know. And there's like also this like other indie stream like earlier this week that like literally showed like a different indie game per minute for like 3 hours. And it's like, how the fuck are you ever gonna like get any attention on like those games if you're doing it in that style? It was just like. It was like bop, 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 bop. Like that's it. It's like a gameplay, quick 1 minute gameplay. You may or may not know the name of that indie. And then moved on immediately. There has to be a better way forward.
There has to be a better way. Imagine like a monochrome, like infomercial, like Summer Games Fest got you down. There has to be a better way. I don't know.
Yeah.
But obviously, hopefully, we're limited in what we can do as a podcast, but hopefully, we have helped at least. For those that are interested primarily in this style of game, hopefully we've been able to at least dilute it down or present it in a way that is convenient to our listeners. Again, thank you so much for listening and sticking with us as we go through all the news across all these different genres. You can find RPG Site online. Just search for RPG Site. You'll find our website, rpgsite.net. We're on Twitter, RPG Site, technically on YouTube, technically on Instagram. Not as active on those as on the others. If you do listen to this podcast, whatever you listen to us on, Spotify, Amazon Music, whatever, give us a like and a rating. That helps us, helps our visibility. And we'd like to see comments if you have any of those. Comment on the news posts or the features on the site. 2 hours ago, we went through all the features on the website. So if you enjoyed those, please give those a like and a rating on the site. We'd love to see those as well. If you listen to us on YouTube, you got an option there as well. We'll be back next week covering everything that hasn't been announced yet over the weekend. So stay tuned for all of that. It's going to be a busy year. It's not slowed down, not really. So we're going to keep plugging along. Thank you so much for supporting our site and our channel.
Until that, next time. Next week is also Shin Megami Tensei 5 Vengeance, I believe, too.
Oh yeah, June 14th. So yeah, 6 days away.
Yep.
And then a week after that's Elden Ring. Doesn't slow down.
Yep.
Then there's Dawn Trail week after then that. Trail.
That's Tsukihime, of course, Chow, right?
Yes, and there's also Trails from Daybreak. Everything is all within the summer.
Yeah, thank you all so much for listening. Until next time, stay safe, take care. We'll talk to you all next week.
Peace out.